Welcome everyone on this Sunday morning, and a warm welcome as well to those joining us online, whether you're watching over the webcam or listening to the website. My name is Eva Kortekaas, and I'm from the Netherlands, and I'm a ministry student at Unitarian College together with Gavin. I would like to share some words of welcome with you I brought with me from my home community in Amsterdam. We welcome all people of goodwill. We welcome you no matter your age, your size, the color of your eyes, your hair, or your skin. You're welcome here no matter whom you love or how you speak or whatever your abilities. You are welcome here, whether you come with laughter or tears. May everyone find comfort and fulfillment as we share our gifts today. And with us, many people, many communities all over the world light a chalice this morning. And I would like to light our chalice with these words. We light this chalice to remember that we are a people of memory. As inheritors of our forebears' legacy, we hold their stories tenderly, gleaning wisdom from their journeys and united in our hopes for the future. We also remember today Joanna Throughton, who has died. We send our love to Keith and Rosa and all who are bereaved by her loss. And I would also like to invite you to join me for a brief moment of prayer. Spirit of all life, source of being, we have just traveled here through surprisingly nice weather by car and public transport. Our minds and hearts are still filled with the joys and concerns of everyday life. Let this be a place where we can leave all of this behind, even if only for a moment. A sacred time and space filled with the spirit of worship, and for today, the spirit of remembrance. Help us approach this hour with an open heart and mind, and a desire to truly see and know the other, so that understanding, hopefully even peace, may blossom. Amen, and blessed be. And I would like to invite up Andrew, who will be leading us in remembering those who have passed away in war and conflict.
Morning, everybody. The members of our church who were killed in the First World War, number 7. The first to be killed were our own Dennis Amer's 2 granduncles, Cecil and Ewing Grimshaw, aged 39 and 48, respectively, sons of his great-grandparents. They are commemorated on a memorial plaque here at the back of the church. These were followed by 5 young men aged between 19 and 24, William Sidney Kidd, William Fitzgerald, Walter Varian, and Frederick and George Faulkner. They all died within 8 months of each other, and the 2 Faulkner brothers died in the same week. So we can only imagine the devastation that must have been caused in this congregation and for their families. I suppose it's very difficult to grasp that at this remove. And this year we're also remembering relatives of our present congregation here today who have also died in wars and conflicts. So we remember Madeline Stringer's relative Reg Blackwell and a great uncle of Nolene Hartigan, John Jassy O'Mara. He was from Ballyhone, Emily in County Tipperary, and he was killed in active service during the War of Independence on June the 21st, 1921, age only 24. Gail Varian's great uncle, Victor Nags, he died at the age of 20 in 1918. And my own uncle, Frank Sweeney, was from Mayo, and he died at age 21 after the ship he served on, the HMS Lapwing, was torpedoed and sunk off Russia 6 weeks before the end of the Second World War in 1945. So remember them all today. Thank you.
And our first reading will now be read by Pam.
Good morning, everyone. I'm going to read the piece I have chosen this morning, and when I have finished reading it, I'll tell you what it is and why I have chosen it this morning. One empty bier is decorated and carried in the procession. This is for the missing, whose bodies could not be recovered. Everyone who wishes to, both citizens and foreigners, can join in the procession. And the women who are related to the dead are there to make their laments at the tomb. The bones are laid in the public burial place, which is in the most beautiful quarter outside the city walls. Here, the Athenians always bury those who have fallen in war. The only exception is those who died at Marathon. Because their achievement was considered absolutely outstanding, they were buried on the battlefield itself. When the bones have been laid in the earth, a man chosen by the city for his intellectual gifts and for his reputation makes an appropriate speech in praise of the dead. And after the speech, all depart. This is the procedure at these burials, and all through the war, when the time came to do so, the Athenians followed this ancient custom. Now, at the burial of those who were first to fall in the war, Pericles, the son of Xanthippus, was chosen to make the speech. When the moment arrived, he came forward from the tomb and standing on a high platform so that he might be heard by as many people as possible in the crowd. He spoke as follows. Many of those have spoken here in the past and have praised the institution of this speech at the close of our ceremony. It seems to them a mark of honor to our soldiers who have fallen in war that a speech should be made over them. I do not agree. These men have shown themselves valiant in action, and it should be enough, I think, for their glories to be proclaimed in action, as you have just done at this funeral organized by the state. Our belief in the courage and manliness of so many should not be hazarded on the goodness or badness of one man's speech. Powerful words, written more than 400 years before the time of Christ. This is an extract from Book 2 of the History of the Peloponnesian War, written by the historian Thucydides. What I feel myself is that perhaps after 2,500 years, we need a new script.
Now it's time for the first hymn, 20, Be Thou My Vision. And now the time has come for the children's story, and I would like to invite all the children and the youngsters and those young of heart to come up front here and join me on the front pew. So come, you're more than welcome. Thank you for joining me up front, guys. It's really good to see so many of you. Oh, and even more are coming. Are we gonna squeeze in, or does someone wanna sit a bit over here? Well, there might be just a little corner here where you can sit if you want. Thank you. I brought something with me today. Do you guys recognize this?
Yes.
Yes, and what is it?
An egg.
An egg. And it's a hard-boiled egg. And do you guys like eggs?
No.
No, okay. Well, I heard someone say they like an egg. Yes, and I see you, you're a wise young man, I think. If you eat an egg, where do you start? Do you start at the pointy end, or do you start at the round end?
I actually don't know.
You don't know, and who else enjoyed eggs? Where do you start? Do you start at the pointy end or at the round end?
The pointy end.
The pointy end. And you like to start at the round end? No, very good. It's very important to know. Because I want to tell you a story about a place where that was really important. Once, long, long time ago, and very far away, there were two kingdoms. And in one kingdom, everyone believed when you eat a boiled egg, you should start at the pointy end. And in the other kingdom, they all believed just as strongly that the only way to eat an egg was to start at the round end. And for years, they tried to convince each other that the other one was right. They wrote speeches. They wrote songs and sang them. They even paid lots of very smart people to research at which end of the egg you should start. But they couldn't agree. So, finally, the kings decided that this question had to be settled for once and for all. So they gathered their armies and they met at the border. And you should picture it. There were rows and rows of tents, and there were flags snapping in the breeze. And if you were to smell the air, it was filled with the smoke of dozens of campfires. But luckily, both kings were also wise, and they didn't want their people to be hurt. So they decided each army would pick their very, very best warrior, and they would send them to fight as their champion. So let me put the egg away for a moment. And so early in the morning, you suddenly saw a bunch of soldiers, and on their shoulders they were carrying a very heavy wooden beam, like dragging it around like that. And behind them there would be more soldiers, and they would have a rope over their shoulders, and pulling together, they were pulling like this, a very heavy wooden block. So what did they do? They put the wooden beam on the blocks, and I don't know, does one of you girls do gymnastics? And you have to do on the beam, right? You have to do things. And it kind of looked like that. It was only so wide. And then came something else important. More soldiers. And they had a cart filled with big, fluffy, feathery pillows. Yes. And then they finally came. The warriors. Looking all serious. Couldn't smile. Very serious. So they stretched. And they climbed on the beam, and then they're like so, and once they had found their balance, they took a pillow, and off they were, trying to hit each other and see who could knock each other off the beam. And sometimes they succeeded. They would fall on the floor with a big thump, but then they'd climb up on the beam again, take another pillow, and off they were again. The feathers flew through the air the entire day, and they fought all morning long as the sun rose higher in the sky. They fought as it became really warm in the afternoon, and as the sun went down, they were still busy. And finally, when the sky grew dark, they were so tired they just jumped down. None of them could win. And they lay on the grass, too tired to even go back to their tent. "I really don't like you," groaned Master Warrior Pointy Ant. And Master Round Ant frowned, and he growled, "What? Do you think I like you?" "But I have to win," Master Pointy Ant exclaimed. "Back home, I have a wife who loves me, and a little boy who wants to eat boiled eggs all the time. And I want him to be free to eat his eggs in the way he likes it, and not the way you think he should eat his eggs." Master Round Ant had to think for a moment. "I have a girl, and she's almost 10, and she doesn't really like boiled eggs. She only likes omelets." Master Pointy Ant had to think again. And finally he asked, "What is she like, your daughter? You know, besides not liking boiled eggs." "Oh, she is really clever. She makes up all kinds of games," Master Round Ant told proudly. "Last weekend, she organized an egg race for all the children in the village. And they had to carry eggs on spoons while they climbed over things and crawled under things." Master Pointy Ant had to laugh. "You know, my son, he just really likes to meet up with his friends and they play tag. But especially, they like to chase the hens around. But my wife doesn't like that because she says they lay fewer eggs then." "No. That doesn't sound like a great idea," said Master Round Ant. And so they talked throughout the night. They told each other about their children and their families and all the things they had done in their lives. They talked as the moon rose high in the sky, and they were still talking when it went down again. And only then they went to sleep. And they thought, "Let's grab one of the pillows we haven't used yet." And slowly the sun came up again, and the smells of breakfast drifted from both camps. The master warriors were woken by the warmth of the sun, and all creaking and sore, they climbed on their feet.
They looked at each other for a moment, and then they hugged. Leaving the pillows behind, they walked back to their own armies. They didn't want to fight anymore, because you cannot fight someone once you've learned their story. And thank you for listening to my story today, kids. I hope you've enjoyed it. And I believe you guys are going off to Sunday club right now.
And for us, it's time for another beautiful song. And it's number 134, One World is Our World. Our second reading this morning is called Religion at its Best by Sarah Gibb Millsboro. Religion is as much about faith in humanity as it is about faith in a deity. And many of us will find that over and over our faith in humanity gets tested. It's all too easy for us to try to justify the dehumanization, ostracization, suffering, and the death of others. It is all too easy for us to devalue some humans' lives and feel somehow that we're still good, upstanding, moral people. Religion at its best asks us to do better than this. To rise above the selfishness and status seeking, the othering and xenophobia that comes so easily to us. Religion at its best calls us to honor which is sacred in every person, even those we might hate, even those we find disgusting. It impels us to accept that there is a sacred spark, a worthy spark in every human being. This might sound mundane, but it's very radical, revolutionary even. Each person sacred, each person worthy. And I would like to invite you to a moment of meditation and reflection. Please, feel free to get comfortable in the pews. It can help to put your feet firmly on the ground or to relax your neck or shoulders if you need to. You can close your eyes if you want, or just leave them open while your gaze softens. Whatever works best for you. And I invite you to take 3 deep breaths. 1 for memory. 1 for understanding. And the final 1 for connection. Please feel free to ponder these words a little bit or to let the music carry you away. Thank you. remembrance looks different everywhere. For example, while it's remembered in many countries around the Netherlands, as the Netherlands were neutral, we didn't really have a remembrance for that. Instead, in the Netherlands, and my own experience with remembrance has been shaped by the Second World War. Each year on May 4th, in the evening, at 8 o'clock, the whole of the Netherlands pauses to remember the lives that were lost during those years, military and civilian alike. For 2 minutes, we're quiet. Since I was 18, I have often attended the memorial ceremony at a small cemetery near my home, and 14 white tombstones there commemorate the crew of 2 Allied aircraft that were shot down in the area. All crew members lost their lives, and they were laid to rest in that small cemetery. And when those 2 minutes were over, when the last post had sounded and the wreaths were laid, everyone attending would slowly file past those graves, and we would place the flowers we had brought. And I often found myself staring at the ages engraved on the tombstones. And as the years passed, I noticed something. First, I was younger than they all had been. And then I was the same age. And now, 15 years later, I'm older than every one of them was when they died. I still find myself wondering sometimes who those men had been, what their lives were like, and who they might have become if this war had not happened. And as I was just listening to Andrew read out the names, I found myself doing the same thing, wondering who were they and who could they have become? And that begs for me the question, how do we remember? How can we remember? It seems to me that there are a couple of different ways. At one extreme, there is the one we sometimes see on television. Big parades, warring speeches, basically a lot of pomp and ceremony. And the people who gave their lives in a war are remembered as abstract heroes who gave their lives for a nation, a great cause, almost like shiny objects to be admired and honored, an example to be followed. Their sacrifice almost seems something to be celebrated. And I'm not saying it's bad. I think it has its place. But it makes me wonder, where is the heart and the soul when we remember them like this? And that is why I am drawn to the other side of the coin, the one where we remember their humanity, where we see them as unique human beings who gave their lives in a terrible conflict. We remember them as unique human beings who had their dreams cut short, who might have left behind a partner, children, parents, siblings, other family and friends, whose passing left a silence in the community they came from. We need to try to see their lives. And sometimes that's easier than others. When we know even a little bit about the people we are remembering, we can begin to picture their lives, to walk in their shoes, even if only for a moment a little bit. But sometimes you know almost nothing. Maybe only a name, an age, perhaps a role they played. But even then, you can honor that individual. And I would not suggest using our imagination to make up what we don't know. But what we can do is wonder. We can ask questions. big ones, like the ones I just mentioned about their loved ones or about dreams being cut short. But what might be just as strong or even stronger is to ask the smaller questions. What favorite meal might they have been missing? Who did they write their last letter home to? Did they maybe get a care package from home? And what was in it? Those small questions make it far easier to connect on a more personal level. But still, most importantly, when we ask both the big and the small questions, we remember them not as abstract heroes, but as people who once lived and loved and hoped, just like us. And in addition, when we remember them this way, we are not just making sure that those who lost their lives are not forgotten. It gives something to ourselves, and it gives something to the world. Because when we wonder, when we try to build a picture of their lives, or we try to walk in their shoes, even if only for that small moment, we are training something deep within ourselves, within our hearts. We are nurturing our empathy and practicing our ability to see the humanity in every human being. And sure, there are many other ways to practice, and novels and movies that allow us to step in another person's life do come to mind. But the weight of knowing how those lives were lost, it gives it a little bit, maybe, a little bit of extra responsibility. It holds the potential to transform remembrance from something confined to a single day in the year into a spiritual practice. Maybe not something we do every day or even every week, but one that arises when the moment calls for it. It's pausing to read the names on a monument, taking just that brief moment to reflect during a busy day. It's picking wildflowers from the roadside during a walk and going into the cemetery for a moment and placing them on the graves of those who died far away from home, taking a moment out of an ordinary day. And at some point, when that empathy, when our ability to see the humanity in others has strengthened enough, then we can begin to let it ripple outward. Then it may be time for the next circle, possible next step in the spiritual practice of remembrance. We do not focus on the people who were once considered the good guys, but those who suffered a similar fate on the other side. I mean those who at the time of the historical conflict might have been called the enemy. Because behind that label of enemy, there was a human being too. We are called to see the humanity behind that label as well, to recognize that they too left loved ones behind, that they too might have had a care package waiting that never would be opened. All those big and small questions we wondered about earlier, apply to them as well. And don't get me wrong, this is in no way about excusing or erasing any of the horrors of war or any terrible acts that might have been committed. And if I look at our history, I do have to admit that in some cases it might be very hard, even impossible, to see that humanity in people. But in most cases, we ought to at least try and remember that many were simple human beings with their own hopes and their own losses. Because I believe this ability to see the humanity in as many others as possible is something that is truly essential for Unitarians, especially nowadays. Because let's be honest, The world is a bit of a mess. Not just a bit, maybe. I'd say it's a huge mess. And things we cherish, like peace and compassion and solidarity, seem to be under threat everywhere. And we do hear people say things like, we need more love, we need more community, we need more hope. And they're not lying, they are needed. But so often those words become simple, empty buzzwords that sound good, while putting it into practice gets forgotten. I think striving to see the humanity in others is an example of putting those things into practice. What does that look like? What can it look like? I can only speak for myself, but one of the biggest threats I see nowadays in the world is how easy it is to depersonalize people, to make them into the other, to dehumanize them. And so often it's forgotten in the public square that every human being is unique and worthy, whether we describe that as everyone having a divine spark within, all of us being children of God, or affirming that every human being has their own worth and dignity. But what if we expanded on the practice of striving to see the humanity in our enemies of the past? Could we do the same for our current opponents, our current enemies, so to speak? For example, in my case, those who make my blood boil by doing exactly what I was talking about, dehumanizing whole groups in society. Is it possible for us to both call out and condemn those actions and words and ideas that they put out in the world, while I also strive to see their humanity behind those things at the same time? Their fears and their hopes and their dreams. Maybe discover something of their life story that lies behind the things we abhor. Can I both hold that search for humanity and my condemnation of their actions in my heart at the same time? I believe it's possible. And I think it might actually be something that we might be called to do as a Unitarian. Who knows what possibilities might bloom from this? Might speaking about their fears and their hopes and their dreams offer for us a way to forge at least a bit of a connection? Might discover their life story offer us a starting point for their conversation? And again, this is not a call to excuse or legitimize anything that's harmful, action, ideas, or words. We do need to be careful of that. But there is a challenge to be like the master warriors in that children's story who fought over which side of an egg to start from, until they spoke sincerely and learned to see each other's humanity. They were not able to stop fighting. They learned each other's story. And I'll be honest, remembrance as a spiritual practice doesn't hold all the answers to how we might do that. But I do believe that by remembering those who lost their lives in past wars in a way that truly makes us see their humanity, we have a small but very powerful tool at our fingertips. Something small and powerful to help us train our empathy just like a muscle and to let it ripple out in ever-growing circles simply by asking questions, wondering, picturing their lives where we can, to let them become as human as you and me. And when I think about it, it seems like a beautiful and worthy legacy for the two flight crews buried near my home, for the man whose name Andrew just read, and so many others who lost a life just like them. Amen. Our third hymn will be number 142, Let There Be Light.
Our notices this morning. Firstly, thank you to everyone who contributed to the service this morning. And a very, very special thank you, Ava, for a beautiful service. I think we'll have her back, if you will all agree. So thank you, Ava. Thank you. And please do join us downstairs for coffee after the service, especially if you are new and if this is your first time with us. Pam leads our weekly service of reflection in the church every Wednesday from 1:05 p.m. to 1:35 p.m. And you can also get these sessions on our webcam. The book club is reading The Library of Heartbeats by Laura Messina this month. And they're going to gather on the last Wednesday of the month in the vestry. So please talk to Alison for details. The Seeking Paradise group continues this Thursday at 7 p.m. Where we will consider chapter 7, the penultimate chapter. The Unitarian Walking Group's next walk will be to the Phoenix Park area on the 15th of November, so next week. We will meet at 10:30 a.m. at the Phoenix Park Visitor Centre for coffee to start at 11. The walk will be in two parts and will be led by Frank Tracy. So thank you, Frank. The church choir begins rehearsing next Sunday at 10 a.m. And if you would like to join us, please come along. We are collecting again this year pajamas, children's pajamas, hats and scarves for the Capuchin Day Center. We will need them by the 7th of December. So you can bring them in and we will store them here for you. So children's pajamas, hats and scarves. Joanna Troughton's funeral will take place this Friday the 14th at 11:30 a.m. in St. Alphonsus and Columba Church in Ballybrack. It will be followed then by cremation at Mount Jerome's. And her death notice reads, "She gave freely of herself, and nobody left our home hungry. She fed us body and soul. So may Joanna rest in peace. Amen."
And the time has already come for the final hymn, which will be 114, Forward Through the Ages. As we prepare to extinguish the chalice and leave this sacred time and space, may remembrance deepen our compassion. May we go forth inspired and nourished, carrying in our hearts the will and the wisdom to find the humanity in every living being, empathy rippling out in ever-widening circles. Let us now go in love and in peace.